Hello, this is Pixelated Playgrounds, a gaming book club podcast discussing the art and craft of video games. I'm Brian Skirsha.
I'm Josh Galecki.
And I'm Clint Jones.
And joining us once again, it's...
Andy Barhorst.
Welcome back, Helldiver. Today, we're talking about Helldivers 2, developed by Arrowhead Games and published by Sony Interactive Entertainment, released here in 2024. We're not really worried about spoilers for this one, but we'll be talking about the whole game anyway, so heads up if you are sensitive to that. Clint, at your beckoning, we became a hero. Became a legend. We became Helldivers. Why are we playing this game, Clint?
Because it's awesome. And I think at the time of recording, I've played 250 hours of this game, and it's been out for a month. What?
And that's not a sign of, I guess we can say enthusiasm. I don't know what is. We brought Andy back because, as we do with most of our favorite co-op games, we need a fourth, and Andy is always there.
Oh, yeah.
A Helldiver to lean on in times of trouble.
Actually, that's how it all started. I played it a bunch. I got Andy involved. We've been playing. This is like our nightly thing after the kids go to bed. We hang out on Helldivers, and then we roped you guys in.
Yeah.
I'm glad you did. Oh, this was a fun game to pick up and play. Very easy to get into as well. They did a very good job with the, call it the introducing the difficulty curve and getting before things get too crazy.
Which is wild because some people complain this is too hard. It's like, guys, maybe don't go straight to level 9. That's not what it's for.
Well, that was my introduction. I think, you know, we jumped in. Clint had a couple weeks to, I don't know, 3 or 4 week head start on me by the time he roped me in on it and I downloaded it. Next thing you know, I'm immediately jumping into the hardest levels thinking, oh my gosh, just getting beat up left and right.
I hear you, Andy. Like, if you go right in, say, with a much higher level character, you will somehow still have fun, which I think is a real testament to this game, right? Like, you're not, if you get thrown in the deep end, that's kind of part of the experience. Like, dying often and in hilarious manners is some of the best parts of the Helldivers experience.
And it is weird because there are things in this game that I would find horribly frustrating in other games. Because this has like really hardcore things like if you reload, you lose your entire clip. Team killing is at an all-time high. Like, every bit of damage... like, you die constantly, and you lose everything when you die. Like, normally I find that horrible, but they managed to make it still fun.
The community's fantastic about creating memes about everyone dying, so it just makes it all part of the culture of the game. It's fun.
You gotta lean into it.
Absolutely. I guess maybe perhaps at this point, for those uninitiated to Helldivers 2, I can quickly lay out what it is. But at this point, here in the spring of 2024, if you haven't heard of Helldivers 2, I don't know exactly what you're doing. Perhaps you're under a rock. But for those under the rock, in Helldivers 2, you're basically a makeshift stormtrooper in service of spreading quote-unquote managed democracy for Super Earth. So you are very much in sort of a Starship Troopers role, shooting down onto planets in a literal bullet to kill either bugs or bots. And there's a lot of different things that are entailed in that, but at its base level, this is a PvE co-op shooter with a lot of really fun camp and sarcasm baked into it.
I think that theming helps out with the many, many deaths that you have, because it's the crazy ways you die and also how quickly you can get back into the action with another bright-eyed and bushy-tailed recruit body for you to toss around and possibly get impaled on different things. The tone is kept light with that kind of satire they have going on.
Yeah, without the humor, I think this game would be just way different. Yeah, well, yes, but like I feel like that's how they keep it light, even when things, like, suck. I mean, there's moment-to-moment gameplay where you're just getting, like, bombarded. It'd be super frustrating if they weren't keeping it funny.
It really is kind of, like, the perfect case study in, like, how tone can make a game completely different. You know, like you said, if this game was taking itself super seriously, it would not feel nearly as fun as it is. Like, the whole, like, layering of sarcasm and camp and, like, pseudo-fake fascism that is in the Super Earth thing is just like, it's really funny and it makes the whole thing entertaining. Like, the things that the Helldivers shout when they die or get hurt or killed are, you know, top to bottom great.
Sweet Liberty, my leg! We like feel like that's got to go in there somewhere.
There you go. I mean, it's a game that's it's made for TikTokable moments, is what I would say. It's, you know, it's popular as hell for a reason. And it's because, like, every moment of this game is pretty much made, you know, in 40-second increments to be able to be super entertaining.
And the gore is next-level hilarious, too. Like, whether it's bots or bugs, like, everything explodes. You pick things apart, explodes everywhere. You leave, as Carson would say, with ketchup all over you. Sorry, Carson. You're probably too young to see that. I don't know.
Ketchup. Yeah, sure. Ketchup all over you. But, you know, the proof is in the pudding here. You know, by the end of March, which are the latest numbers I was able to find, this game sold 8 million units. So,
yeah,
that's lifetime numbers that any game would be envious of. It's in that top concurrence list consistently on Steam. It's just it's a juggernaut at this point. And, you know, there's a lot of things contributing to that.
I think what makes it even more impressive is the first game that came out 9 years ago. It was a twin stick shooter. It wasn't a third person shooter like this one is, but their max concurrent sat somewhere between like 6,000 to 9,000 people. So that's what they were kind of planning on when they released this. And then 1 million people tried to log on at once and they're like, guys, our servers are dead. Like, give us a minute.
Isn't there a story about how they were like actively provisioning servers like over the course of a weekend to try and fulfill the demand for this game? I can't remember exactly.
Yes,
this,
but it wasn't even
a really interesting launch.
Yeah, it wasn't even the servers. That was the problem. Like the CEO just kept getting on. He's like, guys, I don't think you understand. I can't just add more servers. Like the back end was never meant for this. Like my guys have to rewrite all this code. And they did. I'm pretty impressed in how well they did.
This is probably getting a little into the weeds, but this is clearly a team at Arrowhead. Arrowhead Game Studios that has a lot of engineering expertise. They built this game on Autodesk Stingray, which is a game engine known as BitSquid originally, that has, since this game started, been discontinued. So they basically had to do everything with no support from the party whose engine they were using. So they were basically hacking this thing together on their own. Very impressive stuff for a game that is supporting these kinds of numbers, you know?
Wait, did you say Autodesk, like the CAD people?
Correct. Autodesk Stingray. So yeah, obviously, you know, not a engine that is in existence anymore, which is kind of fascinating.
Well, yeah, they're hoping to support this game for years and years. Hopefully that they're able to do that.
Clearly they have the expertise to do it, right? I mean, if they got through the launch of this game with all the back-end craziness they had to deal with, and they came out the other end with no, you know, third-party support, like, yeah, I think they have the chops for it, yeah?
Well, speaking of launch, let's talk about launching into the plot of this game. You start off as a Starship Trooper. You go through a tutorial, which is hilarious. This is probably one of my top five tutorials ever. And then you launch down into the hell pods, into various hell planets, hell missions, fighting hell enemies, all that good stuff.
I really love this tutorial. Like, the way they teach you how to heal yourself is they make you walk up to a pole and then stab you in the gut. They say, okay, now heal yourself. Like, all right, yeah.
And the whole time there's like a general saying, you're the best soldier who's ever come through here on a recorded automated sort of thing. Really sets a tone for the whole thing that, yep, you're going to die very quickly and very often.
It's constantly messaged throughout the game, like, you know, Helldivers are the greatest thing to ever exist, best thing since sliced bread. You know, I think one of the most common quotes that these guys say is, Helldivers never die. Yeah, they do, but
they always die. I think the average lifespan of a Helldiver after training. So after training ends, you get into a cryopod. You're immediately shipped onto a ship. And as they know it, the next moment they're being dove onto a planet right in front of a Biotitan and die within 30 seconds. So that's that's the whole lifespan of a Helldiver.
I mean, that's my experience personally too, so it tracks. but let's talk a little bit about, like, you know, we've talked a little bit about the moment-to-moment, but I think there's something else to this game that makes it a little bit special in terms of why it's, like, captured the minds of so many people so quickly. And it's because, you know, and this shouldn't sound unique, but this is a live service game, right? This is, you know, in the veins of your Fortnites, et cetera. And it has sort of these evolving goals and a, you know, ever-changing sort of state of affairs in the in-game universe, but I think the way that this game has used that to galvanize its player base is, like, quite unique. You know, it's got something really special going on here with its community.
It does, and they do things different than live service. I hate live service games. That's not going to... Sorry to anyone on here. I do, because they do it so different. I think that they're proving that it can work if people do it differently. So, for one, most things like Fortnite's and other live services, they drop a huge amount of content once a month or once every quarter, and then you just like feast on that for a while. And if you don't do things during their time period, you never get to do it, which kind of puts you in a place where you feel like you have to play all the time. This, if you choose to invest in some of these things, like the extra war bonds or whatever, it's there forever. It never goes away. You can do whatever you want. And the only thing that's moment-to-moment changing is these major orders. And you get new ones every day, every couple days. So if you miss one, who cares? The story changes. You move on to the next thing. Like, it's constant feed. It's drip feed instead of, like, all at once.
One of the best things about the major orders, though, is you could have contributed towards it and then not realize that you completed it. Well, maybe not so much not realized it, but you log back in a day or two later and you see, hey, major order completed, and you get credit for that. So there's a lot of value to your contribution towards spreading liberty and democracy throughout, you know, Super Earth and the planets around that they're trying to overtake is compensated regardless.
I do like that. Every time I log in, it seems to me that there's a major order that has been completed, and I get some currencies that I could spend. More on that later. But this strikes me as sort of a sort of rejection of the Netflix model, right? Like, you know, where a whole season of TV is dropped at once, like you mentioned there, Clint. It seems like this is going back to the time when there's, like, you know, the episode of the week and everyone's at the water cooler talking about it. It's keeping people engaged, but also less so making them feel like they're missing out. You have unlimited time to make sure that you're staying apace, or it's not punished when you're not.
Yeah. And speaking of the water cooler, that obviously doesn't exist in game, but this game has like a huge, I'm on their Discord server and the chat is so big in there, they've had to split it into, well, your region. And then even within North America, there's like five different chat lanes because it was just too big to keep track of. But basically everybody's in there talking about major orders, what they think it means for the, you know, the overarching story. Like, there's tons of interaction around the major orders and stuff. I don't know. It's super cool.
There's people that have even gone as far as making websites towards shipping lanes that are happening around the galaxy, right? And how we could potentially, you know, strategize to take out one planet that would cut off another. It's wild.
Yeah, I mean, there's this whole changing galaxy map that has continuously been updated since the game has been launched. And it's all sort of at the whims, I suppose, of the quote-unquote in-game game master, Joel. But there's like a whole history at this point. And, you know, this game's only a few months old at this point. But it strikes me that when I came in, you know, at your guys' beckoning, that there was an entire history that had happened so far in this Helldivers 2 Galactic War. And, like, I don't know, to your guys' mind, like, what are some of the big events? Like, what do I need to know when I'm coming into the Helldivers 2 Galactic War scene, so to speak?
We started off on the bug front on the Eastern Front there, and they were kind of invading
everybody. Galaxy East, of course.
Yes. They were pushing that, like, the Terminids are after Earth, but it turns out we were, as we find out later, we were just farming them for things. We're actually harvesting them for oil. No big deal.
And then they started
taking things over. And then the bots show up, which is where I think you popped in, right? During the major
Correct,
bot
yeah.
push.
Yeah.
Same here.
The game devs actually let us eliminate the bots entirely from the map. Like, they didn't exist for like 3 or 4 days because there was a weird sequence of events where we managed to push them off the map. And rather than like pushing the tide against us, the game dev was just like, okay, we'll play this out. Let's see what happens.
This is sort of like a game finally embracing what it's like to be a really good DM. And I say that fully acknowledging the fact that we just played Baldur's Gate 3, which also does the same thing. So maybe this is a new trend in games where game masters are being cool. I don't know. What do you think?
Actually, this is what you asked why we were playing the game. there's 100 co-op shooters we could have all got on and played and enjoyed. That's what sold it to me, was they were explaining that mechanic in one of the trailers. I'm like, that sounds far out, and I've never seen that in a game before. I want to see what that's all about. Turns out it's sweet. So
yeah, I do like that they seem to be like simultaneously taking somewhat of ownership, but also putting a lot of power in the hands of the players and their enthusiasm, and sort of letting the players lead where this story goes, so to speak. That's probably a lot easier to do in a live service game with some fairly flexible systems for this stuff than it was for, say, a pre-written adventure in, say, a Baldur's Gate 3. But I think that's what makes this game unique, is it is continuously evolving like that. They're really walking a tightrope here. Like, they're not putting too much story on the table, they're not putting too little, but they're being super attentive about what is resonating with players.
Well, we almost make the story as we go, too. Like, he's doing the over... Joel, or whoever he is doing the overarching moves. But I feel like, again, when you're watching on Twitter or Discord, we're almost, like, filling in the blanks and creating our own story around it. Andy sends me memes, like, 6 times a day about things that are going on, quote-unquote, in the universe. These aren't things in the game. These are things that they've come up with.
I'm just keeping you up to date on the latest news. Like,
I appreciate it.
Hey, they found a bug on a, you know... bot planet. Like, that's an interesting tea leaf that's laid out there, right? So, you know, all kinds of things that could be happening down the road, could have happened, who knows, right? All interesting things.
This is one thing I will bring up too. There's a very frequent trend in this game too, where in live service games they'll like talk up like, next season we're going to do this and you're going to get this. In this game they don't say shit. They slow roll things. Like when the flying bugs came out, they let it pepper into a couple games over the course of a couple weeks, and you see people popping up online like, I saw flying bugs. And even the CEO would be getting on like, flying bugs are fake, that shit's not real, report to your local democracy officer, you traitor. And then next thing you know, here they are. And he's like, oh shit, I meant all bugs fly. That was my mistake. Like, even he's like getting involved in this too. Like, they pepper it in, and then they let people ruminate on it, and then it explodes onto the scene.
I think part of the thing, the advantage that the Game Master offers them, is the ability to really engage with the community. You can see where the community is going and respond to what they're liking more dynamically, more quickly than you could if you were trying to be like, what are we going to do for next season? And then you're just waiting over there. So very, very responsive with how he's going about it, which is great.
I'll be honest. For somebody who came into the game playing bugs first, when that stopped and we jumped over to playing bots, I was turned off by it for a little bit. It took me a little bit to warm up to playing bots. Also, I had to completely change my gameplay. Like, significant change to my loadout, how I attacked them, what stratagems I used. It completely changed everything about how I played the game. And so, you know, to the live service portion, to how the game's evolved in the, you know, quarter that it's been out and everybody's been playing it, I'll say that's definitely kept it really active and engaging as a player, right? Somebody who's put 120 hours into this game, that's important to me, and that keeps me engaged.
It makes a lot of sense. And I guess jumping off that a little bit, you mentioned changing up your entire strategy. This is a game where, you know, we are jumping in as in like a co-op shooter, but you're also, you know, in typical shooter fashion, choosing a loadout, choosing the skills and stratagems that you're bringing in. And we haven't even really defined these terms yet, so maybe we talk a little bit about that. You start off as a lowly cadet with your first war bond, quote unquote, where you're unlocking various weapons, armors, skins, you know, things that you can bring into battle and customize your character with. But we mentioned this earlier, there are so many different ways to unlock these things, from the various currencies that you're getting through orders to items and currencies that you're earning through playing the game itself. And maybe we just talk through a little bit about what it is like building your Helldiver. I personally, you know, I've only made my way through a little bit of the initial war bond, you know, unlocking some cosmetics, some guns, some stratagems through the the ship. But, you know, Clint, Andy, I know you guys have kind of climbed the whole tech tree, quote unquote, here. So talk to me a little bit about the process here and where it starts, where it goes.
Sure. So this is from someone who owns every item in the game. Almost.
They only just added some new hours in.
They added some new stuff in the last week that I don't have yet. But yeah, the really cool thing about this game is that for the most part, Okay, so for the guy that's played 250 hours, there's always something to go do and go grab, and they're constantly giving you some kind of currency to go do that. But most of the stuff, I wouldn't say the stuff I'm getting is any better than the stuff you're getting. Within the first 10 to 20 levels, you have access to everything in the game. And the guns you're getting in the war bonds later versus the ones you can get now are not even really better. They're just different approach weapons. Like, there's no pay to win here. Like, later stuff is just as good as entry level stuff.
And speaking as someone who's still just barely in the single digits of hours in this game, I can say that those levels come pretty quick, right? Like, I believe in the double digits of levels, and to Clint's point, I don't feel like I'm underpowered when I, as a, you know, level 10-ish person, am going into a drop with him, a top level, what, 64? Something like that.
Relax, I'm cresting on 70, you bastard.
sorry. Oh, Captain, my Captain.
Fleet Admiral, but relax. I don't know.
Like, that's what I mean. It's like, I think, to your point, like, this isn't a game that, like, dines out on making you pine after those higher level items for very long. You know, it's pretty quick to be able to load your character out in the way that you feel, you know, suits your play style. And I respect the game for that immensely, especially when it's, you know, you do pay money to access this game. You know, it's not a full price game. It's a $40 versus like a 60 or 70, but you're not paying for a battle pass unless you want to. And it's certainly not gating anything that's required for gameplay.
Some of these war bonds actually solve challenges that players are running into as well. So there was a while we were using Tesla towers, and these Tesla towers are basically just towers that fire off a bunch of electrical charges, right? And they kill a bunch of your opponents. So we were running into a lot of challenges at that point when that war bond was out, and we were using that to defend some, what were they, radio towers or something? I forget what they were called.
The TCS towers.
There we go. And so we were running into a lot of challenges where you get zapped with it and you die, right? And that's pretty defeating when you want to use a tower to accomplish defending something as part of one of the three main objectives that we had to do throughout that that level. And so then you started to see a war bond where that had a suit that was up to 95% resistant to arc charges, right? And so those things start to really make a big difference if you know you're going into a level or you're going to be playing in a match where you need some type of protection against that strategy. It makes a big difference when you're playing that game.
Yeah, it's a different loadout for a different strategy, but it's not better than anything else. So instead of the arc charge, we could have used something, I don't know, anything. I mean, there's 100 stratagems in this game. We could have used airdrops. We could have used sentry guns. Like, but again, if you want to use the electrical stuff, this new war bond all focuses on that one thing. It's not better than the others. It's just a different lane.
I want to talk a little bit about the stratagems, because the war bonds, you know, buy some new guns, buy some new armor, buy a cool cape. I feel like that's been done before, but I feel like the stratagems were probably one of the more unique things about this game in terms of how you're going about fighting there. Just how readily available they are, the wide variety of them, and how predisposed they are to friendly fire.
Yes, they will all kill you and your friends every time.
Yes, and you get the increasing ability to kill yourself and your friends as you go up that power curve, which is probably a good thing. But yeah, stratagems, just to quickly define this term, it's sort of like an ultimate or a special skill that you would see in, say, a different type of shooter. You know, a skill you can deploy in a certain area, like orbital lasers from space, or a jet flying by and dropping bombs on a space, or a turret you can deploy, or a special call-in of a resupply or a unique weapon of some sort. They come in all shapes, sizes, and varieties, and they are very fun and powerful.
Yeah, they're basically your kill streaks from Call of Duty, for those of you that are familiar with that. I feel like that's where it's most used. But in this game, you don't have to streak out to use them. In fact, they need you. They designed the game in a way that you can't just go in and shoot your way through. You're going to have to use teamwork, and you're going to have to use your stratagems to get it through.
And even to back it up just a little bit from here, we missed the whole part of the ship, right? The ship aspect is where the stratagems come into play. It's an upgrade that happens on your ship, and that enables you to have that access within the level that you're playing. So as you go through and you're earning all the currencies that we didn't go through all the currencies earlier, but all the currencies you start to earn, right? Whether it's your ordinaries, your rares, your super rares, you really start to build up money, currency, that you can buy all of these stratagems and these upgrades for your ships. And so, you know, every Helldiver that comes into the game gets to name their own ship. I've seen some pretty unique ones. They're fun to see. We have a friend that has a very interesting one as well. But it's a lot of fun, and that adds to the flair of it, right? You know, you're going to go and you're going to join your buddy's ship, right? You go onto their ship, and next thing you know, you're on ship, you know, the starship,
Are we going to call out Princess something. Of Steel? I assume that's what you're talking about.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I was failing to remember it.
I think mine was like the fist of liberty or something like
no,
that.
No, yours was the fist of opportunity. It was the grossest there was the one fist of possible.
Yes, the fist of opportunity. That was the one. Thank you very much, Glenn. They give you some really good, basically this is a X of Y, generally speaking, combo here that you're putting together, and there's opportunity for some good ones.
Josh, what's yours?
I think mine was the beacon of friendship or something similar to that.
See, that's just wholesome. Cute. Yeah. Mine's the Colossus of Conviction, but only because alliteration is cool.
It sounds like an X-Man. To build off your point here, Andy, I think the lobby aspect of this game, which is to say the ship, is really well done. It's not just the fact that, you know, it's a cool space for you and your crew to, like, form up, get your stuff together, and move out, but also they have the TV screen playing, which Clint helpfully pointed out to me is constantly giving you news about the galactic situation and is apparently using, and I will say this is like the first really cool use of AI generated voice and text in game, constantly doing like a news stream of AI generated speech, which is neat. I think it was a good application there.
Yeah, it's cool because, okay, so we were talking about how things constantly change with like the major orders and this and that. They're able to use that to quickly address things that change in this ever-changing. I mean, if you had to hire a voice actor every time, I mean, they're doing this on the daily sometimes.
That would be tough, yeah.
Yeah, you would never be able to keep up with them.
Like, this is a game that actually, like, does do a really good job with environmental storytelling. Like, there are logs on planets that are written and tell you the story of, like, what happened there before you arrived. There are notes, there are propaganda messages. There is that newscast, which is, like, again, the coup de grace of the whole propaganda messaging thing. It's like really good world building in a game that is otherwise just like a live service co-op shooter. It's surprising to see that level of like bespoke storytelling there. So kudos to the game for that, for sure. Once we are heading off our ship into our bullet streaming towards a planet's surface, there are many different types of ways you can engage with this game's, core gameplay, right? There are several different types of games you can engage with, from trying to launch a nuke to refuel a ship to closing out bug nests and things of that nature. Obviously, you two have played all of them. I believe I've played all of them at some point or another, but any favorites?
I'd say probably one of my favorites early on to get a lot of points and to level up was we drop in and do a quick defend mission, right? Where you have to kill X number of bots or bugs and defend a stronghold, right? And then extract out quickly. But as far as like a longer gameplay one, it's actually kind of fun to go through and kill a bunch of bug nests. And lately I've been playing on level 7, so I can capture a bunch of super rares, which gets to be quite challenging, taking out 3 bug nests during a round.
I do like that in regardless of what type of map or gameplay mode you are choosing, you are required to extract out everyone at the end to get full credit for your mission. I think that is like a really solid way of making sure everyone is actually pulling in the same direction and playing in a cooperative manner.
Trying to help each other instead of grief each other.
Exactly.
Yes.
Yeah.
And because there is no incentive to grief. And I guess let me address two things. First of all, my favorite mission, you were asking about that, the ICBM, I think was my favorite early on. There's like 30 types of missions or more now. But yeah, it was an early one where basically you're launching a nuke. But it's not just you go in and launch a nuke. You got to go find nuke codes, and then you have to go turn on a generator over here, and you have to go to this sub objective, and then you all go together and launch this nuke and try to extract. I like how they keep things fresh. There's plenty of objectives. To Andy's point, yes, there's a couple games where you can go in and just kill a bunch of shit, but most of it is like story-based objective stuff. that you're working on things together.
And I really like how they build in some of the same mechanics that they use with the stratagems, which we totally glossed over, and I love this, require you to input, like, button prompts in a quick fashion to execute them. I think this is, like, a really fun and interesting way for them to have you execute skills or complete mission objectives, because lest you think it is simple to input up, down, left, right, A, B, select, you're constantly being shot at or mauled by bugs or, you know, having explosions rock your way or whatever is happening while you're trying to do this. And it is a super tension-building experience trying to enter the Konami code while a bug is mauling your face.
I think one of the really nice touches this game did was they made respawning something your teammates did for you. Like, you can imagine a game where you just die and 4 seconds later you're coming back down from the sky. But they make your teammates have to enter that Konami code and throw your body somewhere, which, you know, they could throw you someplace safe or throw you in the middle of a fire tornado. It's up to them. But I think that kind of, like, is another thing that ups the kind of teamwork factor versus the online trolling factor.
Well, I'm always hoping that they throw me back towards my loadout and my samples so that it makes my life easier and I don't have to wait on all of my stuff to come back down. But I will say one other added benefit to even some upgrades. There's a way to upgrade later on when you've accumulated enough, you know, points and currency and played enough in the game, you can upgrade your ability to steer your hell pod as it's coming down. One of the added benefits of that is you could land on one of the big bugs or one of the bigger bots and take them out as well. So your hell pod can not only become a weapon that sometimes kills you or kills other players, you can take out some of your enemies too.
Yeah, because let's be honest, most of our friends do not throw us into safety or towards our loadout. They use us as grenades and chuck us right into the middle of the horde. So at least that way we can do something worthwhile with our 10-second life.
I remember vividly trying to land on an enemy that was pursuing you, Clint, and almost landing on you. So sorry about that, but you lived. It was cool.
One is more just as likely as the other at that point.
Yeah, it's fun. I think there's so many places that they inject like little instances of fun into this game, and I think that's a really good example, Andy. But to that end, I agree with you, Clint, on the whole nuke mission being a really fun and interesting one. There's a lot of steps there and a lot of things that can go wrong, especially when the nuke actually launches and, you know, you're standing too close and get thrown 30 yards in the distance.
Yep.
Well, something actually, interesting about that early on, they actually didn't have that feature initially. It didn't have the impact of blowing you away, and they corrected that through a bug and a patch upgrade, and then all of a sudden you're getting blown away as the missile's taking off, and you're like, oh yeah, they fixed that.
There was an unspoken like ritual to launching the ICBM. You used to hug as the nuke launched. That was a thing that happened, but that happens no more because you'd all just die of fire.
It's like waiting for the hell bomb to go off. Get out.
Yeah. Or you're hugging your friend flying through the air like a football going through a field goal. We've mentioned a couple times about the difficulty levels here. Obviously, each of these mission types can be done on a variety of difficulty levels, and what that mostly changes is the volume and type of enemies you're going to be facing. And there are some really cool enemies in this game.
There are, but to be fair, the higher difficulty you go, the more sub-objectives you have to complete before the main objective, too. It, like, adds more to that as well. Like the ICBM, like, at the beginning, right, you're just getting launch codes and then whatever. And the next thing, you got to get a launch code, you got to turn on a generator, or you got to find this piece and that piece or whatever. I think like by the time you get to level 9, there's like 4 or 5 sub-objectives before you can actually launch the thing.
Meanwhile, while they are layering in these additional sub-objectives, they are also layering in the types of bugs or bots that you are having to face while doing them. I remember you guys making a big deal of the first time I was going to see a Bile Titan in game. And yes, it was a suitably big fucking deal.
Yeah.
those things are terrifying.
6-story building kind of big deal. Yeah.
You know, they feature prominently in the opening cutscene of the game, which, by the way, we should talk about that opening cutscene at some point.
It's awesome.
It's fantastic. But they are the gigantic, as you said, Clint, towering monsters that you need to probably destroy with a bazooka or an orbital strike or something to actually take out, but suitably intimidating for a, you know, feature enemy in this game.
Yeah, I think in like levels 4 to 5, you'll see them, but they're like the end cap. Like you'll get one, and like everybody's spending all their time worrying about that. On level 9, they just pop up in groups all the time in multiples. It's just like, deal with it. I don't know. Hope you figured something out.
So how are you dealing with that? Is it mostly like a kite and slowly destroy situation, or do you just ignore them and try and continue about your way while hopefully staying alive?
This is important to note, too. There is no ignoring the enemies in this game. You cannot rush to objective and rush to the next one and hope to outpace the enemy. You're just kiting them across the map. The aggro never quits. So if you do not stop and deal with what's in front of you, it's just going to snowball and it's going to end badly. So there's actually a ton of different ways to deal with them. Like the Quasar Cannon that recently came out, we love that. But some of the free guns that come out, even at like level 1, can deal with them. It's just different strategies, different ways of handling things. Stratagems are awesome, of course.
Space lasers.
Yeah, space lasers are great. Love them.
Space lasers are always great. But let's talk about, like, I remember you specifically telling me, like, whenever we come across bugs or bots, it always, almost always, makes sense to kill them. Because, as you said, there's unlimited aggro. This isn't a situation where you can just avoid the problem. At some point or another, it's going to come back and bite you. So you better just deal with it right there up front. And I think that's also kind of a really elegant solution to what would otherwise be just you darting around an open map in your co-op PvE game and completing objectives. It's forcing you to engage with the combat.
Yeah, because you're right. Otherwise, there would be two guys fighting and one guy just running around dealing with stuff in the background. Yeah, this negates that pretty much entirely.
Yeah, it's a good piece of design. And like so many things in this game, it's like making sure that everyone engages with the things that are going to make them have fun, and minimizing the things that won't.
I'd say the two favorite things for me in this game were the stratagems. Like, this game had a focus on indirect fires that I haven't really seen from a first-person shooter before. Not that that's my general genre, but I never went up against a Bile Titan, but I went up against one of the Robot Factory AT-AT things, and it was just everybody raining down stratagems on the guy. I only played up through level 5, so I didn't get through anything truly crazy. But that kind of leads to my next thing, is I feel like this game did a really good job of kind of keeping you at the end of like a... making you stress, but also making it doable to get through whatever you're getting through right there. Like, very finely tuned to make the situation seem worse than they are at times. For example, the chainsaw robots that come after you. When they're coming after you specifically, once they lock onto you, they start, like, sparking up and going acting a little crazier. It's, like, a very juicy-looking mechanic. It has a lot of feedback to it. They look very scary and frightenedness are coming at you, although you're able to outrun them by turning around and going away. But, you know, of course, you're trying to aim your gun at them. You're trying to shoot them in their weak points. All the while, they're going a little closer to you. Very, like, tension-raising moment. Kind of like a Metroid Dread. You remember with the... you know, not my favorite Metroid, but they had those moments you're going up against the cyborgs, and it slows down at the very end for that showdown. It was a little bit of that same flavor. So it was a situation you could run away from, but it felt more exciting the way you did it if you were playing it the way they wanted it to be played. And I feel like even playing with you guys for the few missions we did that, same things with those higher level missions. Like, there were some crazy situations, but I never felt like I'm completely out of my depth and there's no way we're getting through there. You know, we'll just go through 30 Helldivers and we'll get there.
That's because the armor that you have access to at level 1 is just as good as the armor I have at level 67. And the guns are pretty much the same, too. Just a couple more options. Like, you're just as capable of dealing with these things. Most of your level up is knowledge and teamwork, really.
And can we talk a little bit about how this game controls? Because what you unlocked in what you just said for me, Josh, is that this game kind of controls like a horror game. You're cumbersome, right? You're not as agile as you are, I would say, in most shooters. Like, your character kind of lumbers around. When you do these dives, like these dives away from enemies, like you're like prone on the ground after them and sort of stunned for a little while. Like, it is useful to dive out of the way of enemy stuff, but you are then shooting from the ground as you try and regain your composure. Like, this is a game that kind of lives and dies on making you feel desperation at times, but then it's suddenly hilarious. It's a really fine line that they're walking with that, and you know, I think it's tuned in within an inch of its life.
And it's more than just having access to the weapons or armor at the beginning. Like, it's the thing where you do a, you use your orbital strike stratagem on a group of enemies and they spawn two more dropships right by you. Just because they know you're a little weaker right there. The kind of the timing the game plays with is very, very well done and makes for a very compelling game.
Part of that compelling nature is the tools that you're bringing into any given match. And we talked about the ability to choose loadouts and how you can, you know, broaden that toolbox as you continue to level up. But it strikes me that you're not really choosing this in a traditional sense of like the healer, DPS, tank situation. It's more like everyone is sort of making sure that the team as a whole, like across all four players, or hopefully all four players, mostly, most likely all four players, have all of those aspects covered for the team. You know, you don't necessarily have to resign yourself to a single role, but you have to be able to play multiple parts throughout the course of a game.
I agree, yes. So, for example, when me and Andy play, there's something called an orbital rail strike that can take down really high-level enemies. It would be dumb if we all brought it, but I always make sure one of us has it. That way we have it in the back pocket, and then maybe the other person brings a sentry so they can cover that. We're not doing dedicated roles, but we make sure that we fill out the repertoire instead of all of us having, like, the meta.
So one of the negative things, but it's also a positive thing in a way, and I'll explain why, you don't always see your mini-map when you're playing. And that's somewhat annoying as you're running through. And you have to bring it up as you're going. And also, while you bring it up, it disables you from doing other things when you have that up. But one of the reasons that the way they pull up this mini map is good is because while you're looking at that mini map, you can see each one of your teammates and what is available and what is waiting on a cooldown for their stratagems or their backpacks or whatever they might be calling in. And so you get more in-game feedback that way on visibly on your screen, because you can see what the other Helldivers have that you could ask them to call in as part of a strategy as you're attacking a base or taking out an enemy.
You see that, you also see where the nearby enemies are as well. But while you do that, you can't shoot. And that's another example of like the trade-offs they make you make. If you want that extra information, we're going to, you know, while you're doing that, you're a little less powerful.
So this is actually something they addressed pretty heavily when there was one round of nerfs at the beginning of this game. People were pretty upset. They're like, stop nerfing things, make other things better. And they're like, we're going to do both. But the most important thing out of anything in the game is that everything has a trade-off, just like you were talking about. So they introduced mech suits, which might seem horribly overpowered. And they are in some fashion, but they're also tin cans. Like, and they control like shit. So everything that's cool has to have an equal and opposite negative side to it, too. So again, when you're getting the information, you're at risk. If you have a cool gun, it could also blow you up, like the rail cannon. Like, the rail cannon is super powerful, but if you hold the charge too long, it explodes in your
Kaboom.
Hand. Yeah. So everything has trade-offs. Everything is about risk versus reward in this game.
You know, they do a really good job kind of like, I'm just thinking about some of the stratagems I've seen and how often they say, this will do friendly fire. This will do friendly fire. I'm surprised I haven't seen one that said, this will seek out Helldivers. So throw it away from the rest of you.
Some of them do, like the space laser, for one. If there's no enemies around and you are, it kind of just goes right after you. So it's, keep it away.
That's awesome. I mean, hey, you're a life form too, I suppose. But I really think what all of this underscores is the fact that there could be, quote-unquote, a meta for this game, but it is useless in the context of actually having a well-kitted-out team from at least what I've experienced. And, you know, I'm not playing at the level of you, Clint, or Andy, but it strikes me that if there is a, quote-unquote, meta in this game, like, it certainly seems a lot less mandatory than in most co-op shooters.
There was one, not because there actually was one, but because YouTubers are dumb and they made one in the first couple weeks, and that's kind of where it came from. That's where the nerfs came from. They're like, we don't believe in metas. We want people to be well-rounded. We want everything to be viable. So the thing that you guys are all running, we're going to tone it down a little bit or make it a little more disadvantageous so that people will branch out. I think it worked.
And I like that. Like, I think to me, like, player expression is kind of like most of the reason I like to play games. So when there is a quote unquote meta, it kind of feels limiting and a little bit boring to me. So I prefer the way that Helldivers 2 handles this, just personally.
It does help that it's not PvP either. When you aren't trying to be a good PvP game, you don't have to balance things within an inch of their life. Mm. You get more wiggle room.
That got brought up actually pretty early. Everybody was pushing them like, hey guys, add PvP to the game. And I'm going to butcher his name, so I don't even want to say it. But the CEO of Arrowhead, as he frequently does, got on Twitter. He's pretty active on that and said, hey, look, guys, we're never, ever putting PvP in this game. That brings some toxic bullshit that we don't want anywhere near our game. Go play Call of Duty. It pissed off a lot of people, but actually, I appreciate it. Like, they had a vision for what they wanted to create. They've created something special here, and they're not going to fuck with it just because people are pushing it online.
I think that's admirable, honestly. Like, they have a lane. They want to stay in it. They have no desire to do that. Therefore, why should they? You know, at the end of the day, they are the ones developing the game after all, and they know what they're good at.
And like
you said, there's already a solution for that if that's what you're looking for. But like all good things, every mission of our Helldivers must come to an end. And with that comes, as we mentioned earlier in the cast, extraction. I think this is just a really excellent mechanic that ups the tension at the end of every single round and forces you back into that cooperative mindset that perhaps you may have strayed from as you adventured out throughout the world that you are spreading liberty on.
Yeah, and one of the most important things about this is we didn't really get into currencies at all, and that's okay because there's a lot of them, but one of the really important ones is samples. And the only way to get credit for samples is if you extract with them, and the team all gets credit, but somebody has to be holding it when they get on the ship. So these become like what I'm going to call long-term end game things, right? You have most of your guns and your stratagems early, but some of the ship upgrades take these samples. So it becomes like an all-out brawl at the very end. I feel like when you call in your ship, every bot or bug on the map is like ready to take you down. So everybody has to be back. Yeah, everybody's got to be together and cooperating to make sure that the guy with the samples gets on the ship.
Well, and they change extraction based on the planet, too. You might have a 4-minute extraction, a 2-minute extraction. In the game, just like stratagems, you have an option to add a booster, too. And that booster can shorten how long it takes for your extraction to be called in. So there are some ways that you can offset maybe a planet that has a longer extraction time by using a booster to help you shorten that extraction time. And just like Clint was covering, you know, you start trying to get those samples out. And the ultimate goal is you think you've passed all the tests, right? You've hit every objective, hit all the side objectives, and you're sitting here at extraction, and you just may have hit your biggest objective yet when everything aggroes on you and tries to stop you from extracting with every single sample that you collected.
Yeah, and I guess that brought up an important part that we didn't even talk about earlier. Some of these side objectives aren't just like things to get XP. They're things to make your life easier or be beneficial to the mission. Like, there are things on bot planets that if you don't take them out, they will block your ability to call in stratagems or call in extremely advanced weapon types for the enemy. If you don't take care of those during the game, all those comeuppance are happening while you're trying to extract with your precious samples. So you really want to hit some of those beats during the mission and take that upfront hit so that you can actually make it out alive.
Yeah, it's a great point. And I think it really ties a nice bow around the fact that these side objectives are not just optional, you know, extra credit. They are important to the fact that you want to extract in one piece.
They make you want to do them for gameplay reasons besides let's grind up some extra XP and samples.
It's a really holistic game design to make sure that you're having fun to a purpose throughout the course of an entire mission. But with that, let us extract ourselves from this podcast into some 3-word reviews.
From the Skull Admiral, Andy, level 52, Helldivers never die. So funny enough, I didn't fall in love with Helldivers right away. I dove into it thinking first-person shooter, co-op, you know, what am I getting into? And it took me a bit to grasp both the gameplay and the flow. So as of this recording, as I said earlier, I've logged over 120 hours of gameplay on Helldivers 2, and there's something quite unique about it that continues to earn my attention. Everything from spending countless hours repeatedly dying with your fellow Helldivers to spreading democracy and liberty across the galaxy. The development team and community have done a fantastic job commingling a virtual world of Super Earth and planets with real life by creating such a strong presence on platforms like X and Reddit and Discord. Helldivers worldwide can't wait to see the next major order or which new enemies the bots and bugs will manifest. Helldivers 2, for me, is such an underrated game that hit the scenes and showed everyone what a solid development team and community can really do. It's the early innings of this fantastic title, and I can't wait to see where we'll be spreading democracy in the future.
My three-word review is solidarity supersedes sweatiness. In all honesty, online multiplayer shooters are not the place I usually gravitate towards when gaming. Keeping up with the latest meta, dealing with overly competitive Reddit sweatlords, and general toxicity in the player base usually keeps me away. That said, I think Helldivers 2 may have found a very elegant solution to that problem, emphasizing cooperation and solidarity with your fellow Helldivers, and making dying frequently and in comical ways a core part of the experience, a key aspect of gameplay. The fact that you can team up with a level 2 and a level 64 person and still work towards the same goal and have fun is wild, and quite unique in online gaming from my perspective, especially for a live service game. In some contexts, a game designed for everyone can be construed as a game designed for no one. But through its major orders and galactic scale conflict, Helldivers 2 strikes the right balance to keep everyone engaged and working towards the same goals. That being said, it's still not for you if you don't like co-op, need an in-depth story, or want PvP. But if you're down for some awesome cooperative PvE, then solidarity can supersede sweatiness and multiplayer gaming toxicity. And that is some sweet liberty.
Amen to that. All right, my three-word review for this game is pressure, pacing, direction. Helldivers 2 does a fantastic job creating memorable and fun experiences. It does so by careful consideration of gameplay and pacing. You land anywhere on an instanced map with up to three friends or strangers, point space lasers at giant bugs, and hopefully get out before being overrun by the infinite hordes. There are moments of triumph and moments where you'll scrape by the skin of your teeth. The game is the best I've seen since Left 4 Dead at directing the play experience with a well-timed mob, a Hulk, or a fire tornado. For all the times I found myself hanging at the end of my rope, it never felt unfair or hopeless. Being able to share that feeling with friends is a great experience and the mark of a superbly crafted game.
Very nice. My three-word review is democratize with friends. Helldivers 2 scratches an itch that had been bothering me for a long time. As a dad, I don't get to go out and see my friends nearly as much as I'd like, so I always enjoy a good hangout game that lets me regularly connect with friends and hang out virtually. In the past, games like Call of Duty and Payday kind of filled that void, but both of those franchises have effectively fallen off a cliff in the past few years, leaving a democracy-shaped hole in my heart that can only be filled by smashing bugs and bots in the name of freedom. Not only does Helldivers have an excellent minute-to-minute gameplay, but the overarching D&D-style Galactic War campaign is very unique and keeps things fresh even after hundreds of hours played. I find myself frequently checking in just to see how major orders are progressing even when I don't have time to dive into a match. Like any good dungeon master, Joel gives us players the agency to feel like our successes and failures truly matter to the outcome of the story, and I love how they incorporated those tabletop elements into a co-op shooter. It bears mentioning, too, that even though live service games have been a complete and total cancer to the gaming community as of late, Helldivers manages to strike a solid balance and show how this model can work when you put gameplay first and don't turn games into a hostage situation with FOMO tactics and exclusive timed events. I hope that if live service is here to stay, it's more games like this and a lot less overly predatory garbage. All that is to say, Every bit of this game oozes with love and care that the devs clearly put into it. When a game is a passion project and not just a product to be sold, something truly special is possible, and I strongly believe that's what we're seeing here. With such an intensely strong community built around Helldivers, I see no reason why we won't be spreading managed democracy for years to come, and I'm completely on board.
And with that, I want to say thanks for listening. And if you enjoyed this podcast, then feel free to share it with folks you think might enjoy it as well. If you want to get in touch, drop us a note at pixelatedplaygrounds@gmail.com or contact us on X Twitter @pixelplaypod. For us here at Pixelated Playgrounds, I'm Brian Skirsha.
I'm Josh Galecki.
I'm Clint Jones.
And I'm Andy Barhorst.
Take care and keep spreading managed democracy.
Did we all just agree on a game? Did we get four people on and all agree about it for once?
We did for Sea of Thieves, didn't we? I thought we all liked that one.
I would say yes and no, but I mean, it's a co-op game. It's kind of hard to not agree on your experience when you're all playing a co-op game together.
Because we have the experience
having a good
together.
Time, right?
Yeah.
I will say one thing, though. Like, this game does still, like, it does check all the boxes for me in terms of, like, what I generally look for in a multiplayer game. And I still think, like, primarily for me, like, it's not going to be the first game I seek out at the end of a long day. Like, I just want to, like, gaming for me continues to be a solitary pursuit. I would rather play, like, a single-player story game at the end of the day. That's just me.
Me and Andy like to hang out online after the kids go to bed. I feel like we've always had a game where we do that, and this has been the new one, so.
But it's definitely action-packed, though. I mean, you're, to the point earlier, I mean, you are being chased by some kind of bug or some kind of bot. Like, it's not chill. Like, you're not running around a Fortnite map, playing Battle Royale, kind of hanging out, finding a spot to camp.
It's intense.
Well, that's what I guess that's maybe what I'm trying to get at with that comment is, like, you know, lots of different games do it for lots of different people, and, like, you know, I think this is a fantastic example of what this game does. But at the end of the day, like, there are just other types of games I prefer more, and that's just my taste.
But if you're in the mood for co-op, I feel like it does.
Yeah,
it does.
I absolutely agree with you there. Like, if I'm in a mood for co-op, this is currently the go-to for me, I would say, for sure. You know, we didn't mention this during the main body of the cast, but this game has some fantastic music, like John Williams level excellent scoring. You know, the song or the tune, excuse me, the track that plays as you descend onto a planet, composed by our overall soundtrack composer, Johan Lindgren, and then reproduced by Wilbert Roger II for this game, is really great. That composer apparently has worked on a bunch of shit over the years, Call of Duties, etc. And it is suitably epic for this game, I would say. I always notice music, but did you guys happen to notice that or enjoy it?
It's to the point where we, like, hum the tune as we dive every time. I feel like one of us is always, like, humming it over
da,
the...
Da, da.
Yeah.
I find myself humming it during the day. It's, yeah.
I mean, it's super good. Like, it is a very good tune. I could see, like, if there's a Helldivers movie, and, you know, we already made the comparison to Starship Troopers, but, boy,
I feel like we need
this
it.
Is...
It's pretty
more
much
iconic score.
But even the ominous music that starts to come in as you can almost feel like, hey, a Bio Titan's coming up, or like one of the big enemies is launching, right? So you can tell when something big's about to happen, and they do a great job at that through the music.
Yeah, fantastic composition. I always make fun of Josh because he never notices music, but Josh, I have to ask, did you notice the music?
Not so much, no.
God damn it, Josh.
Felt like the orchestra was sitting in my ears the whole game.
I know. I love this game score. It It's really good.
I would say it's a high point, but I feel like most things about this game are high points, so maybe they all just blends together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I have to agree with you. Like, this is a game that's, like, just doing everything it's trying to do really well. So.
But they went hard with the marketing, though. Even during March Madness, I saw commercials about it and everything, so... They didn't need to, though.
Actually, they were like, could you please turn the commercials off? We're fucking dying over here. Our servers can't take this. And Sony's like, no, we're going to do it. You'll figure it out.
More.
Yeah, more Helldivers.
You know, it's so funny to me because, like, we've seen a slew of live service games get canceled recently. You know, we're talking now in early 2024 because I think there's a sentiment that this type of game is oversaturated in the industry and, like, you probably already have one and you're not looking for a new one, but I feel like Helldivers 2 just kind of upended that idea.
Yeah, it's the no timed exclusives thing. I've played a couple and I leave them eventually feeling like I've been held hostage, like literally, because you're like, oh shoot, I have 1 week to get this skin, and if I don't, it's gone forever, but I paid for the battle pass, so I better just waste every night, even though it's not what I want to be doing. I got to go do that. This just gets rid of that. Play when you want to play. Turns out you're going to want to play. But don't do it because you have to. Do it because you want to.
I do agree with that. Like, I'm with you in, like, feeling that appointment gaming doesn't really fit into my life these days. Like, and that's part of the reason why I said what I said earlier about the fact that, like, at the end of the day, I usually don't seek out a co-op shooter. Like, at the end of the day, like, that is the time that I need to be flexible because I might need to get some shit done. I might just want to fucking chill. Appointment gaming doesn't really work for me. And I think that is something that this game leads into really well, is that it's not forcing you to, as you said, you know, be held hostage by what's going on in the game. You can just sort of absorb it at your own pace. And, you know, to the point that we've made many times, Clint may be checking in more often than I am at level 67, but I am still able to play with you at level, you know, 10 or whatever.
And it's worth mentioning, too, that, yes, there are timed events. They're the major orders. Cool. If let's say we had a huge bot push the other day where, again, we pushed them off the map entirely, but there was 10% of the 15% of the player base that just chose to not do that at all. Like, we were all super excited about it, but they don't force you to do that. That's, you can just do whatever you want. You can ignore the major orders, have nothing to do with it, or you can jump in and be a part of it if you want.
Those other planets still need liberated, right? Like that. Yeah. That's not a campaign that hasn't completed, though, right?
So it's just not part of the D&D campaign. That's all.
That's right. Everywhere needs liberated. You're on a side quest, right? It's the D&D side quest instead of the D&D main quest. It's okay. Side quests are sometimes the best quests. Just ask Oblivion's Dark Brotherhood.
Oh, agreed. It's the best one. Best example, actually.
You know, I feel like sometimes I wonder if Elder Scrolls games have a main story quest. And I do remember they do, but I also remember I never play them.
Me neither.
The real story is the friends you make along the way, just like Helldivers 2.
That's right.